Welcome back to another episode of Never Found, Never Forgotten. I'm your host, Melanie. And the case that I have for you this week is one full of mystery. This is the disappearance of civil rights activist Perry Ray Robinson Jr. in 1973. This week's episode is going to be a bit of a history lesson, too. This is different from most of the cases that I tell you about because this one has an ending, sort of. So Ray was a civil rights activist who had followed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He had participated in the 1963 March on Washington, where he heard Dr. King's famous I Have a Dream speech. Ray helped organize Resurrection City, which was a 1968 camp set up on the Washington Mall. And the goal of Resurrection City was to bring attention to the issues of poor people of color in the United States. He was also involved in the Vietnam Veterans Against the War organization. In 1966, Ray met Cheryl Buswell at an anti-war rally, and the two of them were married. Cheryl had been raised in a very conservative Republican home, but dropped out of college to pursue her passion in political activism. The two moved near Selma, Alabama, and went on to have three children, two daughters and a son. And they worked at various grassroots organizations while raising their young family. In 1973, at a meeting of the Vietnam Veterans Against the War, Ray learned about the Native American occupation of Wounded Knee. And despite Cheryl's reservations and protests, Ray insisted that he needed to be there to show his support and help out. On February 27, 1973, 200 Oglala Lakota and members of the American Indian Movement took over the town of Wounded Knee, South Dakota. The American Indian Movement is a grassroots movement started in 1968, and their goal is to address tribal issues such as treaty rights, poverty, police brutality against Native Americans, unemployment, cultural continuity, and education. They then occupied the town until May 8, 1973. And they were protesting the failure to impeach tribal president Richard Wilson and the U.S. government's failure to honor treaties. They demanded that the treaties be renegotiated so that Native Americans be treated more fairly. And they chose the location of Wounded Knee because it was the site of the 1890 massacre that killed nearly 300 Lakota men, women, and children perpetrated by the U.S. government. So, during this 71-day takeover, U.S. Marshals, the FBI, and other law enforcement agencies descended on the area, and they cordoned it off, and there were roadblocks to Wounded Knee. About 30 days into the siege, the government cut off the electricity, water, and food supply to Wounded Knee, hoping for a quick surrender. Throughout the siege, both the government and AIM, the American Indian Movement, exchanged gunfire. All told, the siege left two Native Americans dead and one U.S. Marshal paralyzed as a result of his wounds. The occupation of Wounded Knee was widely publicized in the media, and there was widespread public sympathy for the Native Americans, and it drew a lot of national attention to the issues they were trying to address. During the occupation, the FBI was criticized for releasing false information that perpetrated dissension and mistrust. And they were also criticized for using undercover individuals to create disorder and distrust within AIM, the American Indian Movement. AIM was also criticized, though. They were criticized for using money to purchase weapons rather than providing aid to Native American people. AIM had several political issues within its organization that have since been criticized as well. So Ray, a civil rights activist who had experience with civil rights movements, believed that he needed to be at Wounded Knee. And so he traveled from Alabama to Wounded Knee, South Dakota, to offer whatever support he could. And he reportedly left on April 25th, 1973. But he never returned home. Because all of this happened on tribal land, the Pine Ridge Reservation, federal authorities investigate crimes that happen there. So Cheryl had to file missing persons reports with the FBI. As you can imagine, that's not as easy as it would sound. The FBI visited AIM offices in Rapid City, South Dakota, and their headquarters in St. Paul, Minnesota in October of 1974, over a year after Ray went missing. But even that, the family doesn't really get any concrete answers. But the rumors swirl. And despite the family's hope, the rumors suggest that something dark happened to Ray. While there were several different stories, all of them point to the murder of Ray Robinson at Wounded Knee in 1973. In 2011, the family hired a Buffalo, New York-based attorney, Michael Kuzma, and he filed a Freedom of Information request with the FBI for records in relation to Ray's disappearance. In 2013, Kuzma filed a lawsuit in U.S. federal court to gain full access to all the documents in the case. In March of 2014, the FBI released those documents to Kuzma, and the family then learned what they have been dreading all along. The documents seem to confirm Ray's death. In a memo dated May 21st, 1973, witness statements claim that Ray had been tortured and murdered and his remains buried in the hills. So this is where I stop and I preface this and I say that I'm not an investigative journalist and I'm not a journalist at all. I just try to piece together these stories. In the FBI documents, one witness said Ray had been shot in the knee and later bled to death. He was shot after he'd been at Wounded Knee for a week. Some of the accounts suggested that Ray was having trouble accepting the harsh conditions at Wounded Knee. At this point, the electricity had been cut off, there's a shortage of food, and they are under constant surveillance by the government law enforcement officers, but also the AIM members, who are also suspicious because they've already been infiltrated by undercover FBI people. And AIM seems to have this unilateral command. Some accounts say that Ray tried to discuss strategy with various leaders, and he got into an argument. And his wife, Cheryl, said that Ray would not have done well under this authoritarian command. According to this account, after the argument, Ray is escorted to a house by various AIM members. In some accounts, Ray grabs a butcher knife from a table, but he's surrounded by members of the AIM security team. He's then shot. Some accounts say he's shot on one knee. Some accounts say both knees. Some accounts also say that there's no way to get him medical attention because of the siege that's going on and the roads being blocked. Others say that after he was shot, he was taken to Wounded Knee Medical Center where he bled to death. The FBI was not able to confirm if Ray was actually taken to the medical center. In the late 1970s, Cheryl hired Barbara Deming, a writer and activist, to look into Ray's disappearance. The account that she heard was that one morning, Ray was eating breakfast and he hadn't yet checked in with AIM officials, and so he was ordered to check in immediately, and he said that he would report after he finished his breakfast, and that's when he was shot. AIM member Richard Two Elk said that other AIM members were resentful of Ray. He was eating their limited food supply freely, and they had very different philosophies on handling the situation that was happening at Wounded Knee. Ray had adopted a philosophy of nonviolent protests and civil rights work, and AIM was known for armed resistance to the federal government. And this might make him suspicious to AIM members, thinking he was an FBI informant. Two Elk said, quote, "One of the things that's quite apparent was the conflict and clash of the two concepts of social rights, civil rights and Indian rights. Indian rights are in a whole different context. They, meaning blacks, are coming from rights within the system. And Indian rights was about sovereignty and independent nations." End quote. Cheryl has said, quote, "Ray went into a situation that he thought commitment to a struggle would overcome any obstacles or misunderstandings. Well, it didn't." End quote. I want to pause here for a moment to talk about being a good ally when participating in social justice movements, because I think it's relevant today as it was to Ray in 1973. It's noble to want to help fight for social justice and equality, and I really think the world needs more people like Ray willing to stand up alongside our oppressed brothers and sisters and demand change. But when you commit yourself to being an ally, you must be aware of your behavior and your privilege. Dr. Lynn Gell has written an ally bill of responsibilities that I'll link to in our show notes. But as an ally, you have a responsibility first and foremost to listen, and second to learn. And you never want to have your voice or your presence distracting from the voice of those you are supporting. And I think Ray had a lot of things to offer this situation. He had skills and knowledge that could have been offered. But he was coming in late to a volatile situation. And this way, in no way excuses his murder. Don't get me wrong there. There's no justifying that. To understand that situation, the differences in philosophy and dealing with the situation, I think Two Elk was right, that the civil rights movement was different from what the Native Americans were fighting for at Wounded Knee. And this is part of listening and learning. And it just increased the tension in an already tense situation. While Ray Robinson was declared legally dead and FBI documents confirm his death, the family is still left with answers. What really happened to Ray? And where are his remains? They just want to bring him home. Ray was 35 years old when he went missing. He was 6'2" tall and weighed 200 pounds. He was described as being an African-American male with black hair and brown eyes. He had a beard at the time of his disappearance. Anyone with information on the disappearance and death of Perry Ray Robinson Jr. can contact the FBI Minneapolis field office at 763-569-8000. That's my episode for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in. I do want to bring back an old segment that I used to do called Let's Talk About Books. So, I do a true crime book club, and each month we read a different true crime book. And so this week, I want to share with you the book we're reading for this month. It is called The Wizard of Lies, Bernie Madoff and the Death of Trust by Diana B. Enriquez. Okay, typically not what I think of when I think of true crime, you know, like Bernie Madoff. So I hear that name a lot. You hear the name Bernie Madoff or whatever. I remember hearing about it Ponzi scheme. Like, it's all, like, vocab words that I just don't know about. But I highly recommend this book. So it does get into the nitty-gritty of what he did, the crime, the Ponzi scheme, all of that. But it's super fascinating. He certainly was a wizard of lies. So if you like true crime that's maybe a little bit different, less bloody maybe, I highly recommend The Wizard of Lies. I didn't think I would like it. I thought it was going to be terrible. When someone suggested this for our true crime book club, I was a little hesitant because I thought, oh my gosh, I don't care about Wall Street. But, like, I thought I was going to hate it so much. I downloaded the audiobook version thinking I'm going to have to, like, force myself to listen to it in my car and just hope I pick up enough to, like, lead this discussion. But I was hooked. I was hooked after the first chapter. Granted, it's taken me a long time to read because there's so much stuff, and, like, every now and then I'll have to go to my husband and be like, explain to me the difference between a mutual fund and a hedge fund. I don't know. I still don't know. I still don't think I understand. To me, it's all monopoly money. It doesn't make sense. I don't understand. But the crime itself is interesting. The victims, who is a victim, who's not a victim. Super fascinating book. So well researched. So well written. I highly recommend this book. So, we're bringing back Let's Talk About Books. And let's talk about books. Tell me what you're reading. I'd love to know. You can find me on Twitter, @PodNever. And you can find me on Facebook, Never Found, Never Forgotten Podcast. If you want to recommend a case, you can also email me at neverfoundneverforgottenpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much. Bye.